Howdy and welcome to Thin Air, news with an altitude from small town public radio in the Rockies and Four Corners. I'm John Kovash.
I'm Josie Kovash. Howdy. This month, Colorado courts make it tough for ski resorts to provide housing.
Stop having more festivals, stop publicizing, never talk to People magazine.
In Moab, Terry Tempest Williams says Christians don't have enough fun.
The cherries are Utah's state fruit, which symbolically Jung would say it's sexual repression.
A Western Slope politician and a sheriff speak out against the drug war.
If you take away all the alcohol and drugs, they're going to go sniff gas.
But first, our monthly mosey around the Thin Air beat.
The Uncompahgre National Forest stretches from Montrose to Gateway, and some Greens say it will be the most roaded forest in the Rocky Mountain region thanks to a new travel plan. Critics say the new Uncompahgre travel plan legitimizes 178 different user-created roads and 63 user-created trails for motorized use. In exchange, ORV and SUV pilots face a new requirement to stay on designated roads and trails. 11 conservation groups are appealing the travel plan. They cite specific concern over motorized access on the Long Canyon, Uniweap, Cimarron, and Dallas trails. Western Colorado Congress and the other appellants blame motorized use for a steep decline in mule deer on the Uncompahgre Plateau. They vow to, this year, put a stop to damage caused during hunting season.
More Olympic madness for Park City, Utah, where the Olympic Committee wants to erect 15 hospitality suites in Town Park. The temporary structures for sponsors and invited guests would have carpet, TV, phones, and maid service for up to 5,000 people a day. Air monitoring results are just coming out for the burned areas of the Los Alamos labs. Meanwhile, in Technical Area 16, a dump for World War II-era explosives and depleted uranium, a robot has been digging up still smoldering debris 1 month after the eruption of the Los Alamos fire. An underground fire was still burning in three pits of unknown depth with significant concentrations of barium and other metals. Area 16 is on the state of New Mexico's list of sites with a high concern for groundwater. Initially, crews tried to smother the underground fire with dirt. When that didn't work, they turned to the robot, which can risk the explosives and potential radiation.
In nearby Santa Fe, local Greens charge that the Forest Service has hastily prepared a new plan to thin trees in Santa Fe's watershed to reduce fire danger. And the city of Santa Fe is debating whether to thin its own 3,000 acres of forest.
I ran into Bonnie Raitt and Jackson Brown in the liquor store.
We just had four women pull their shirts up for beers here.
Sam Bush, yesterday afternoon, great set.
There's a lot of beautiful women. Today there's a lot of good drugs and a lot of good beer.
Last month, Thin Air reported on a growing phenomenon, highway safety checkpoints, where motorists are stopped and sometimes searched and arrested. This year's Bluegrass Festival included one brand new checkpoint on Lizard Head Pass, manned by local police from Cortez and Dolores. Dozens of motorists had their vehicles searched. Some alleged the cops were profiling, targeting long-haired and countercultural types.
Scores of festival-goers complained to Planet Bluegrass. They included Scott Chandler, who's an EMT in nearby Rico.
These two guys got out, but they were both in like black, you know, SWAT gear or whatever. And one guy had a sawed-off shotgun. He stood at the left front of my truck. And the other guy came around and told me to get out. And a third cop came around with a dog, a shepherd, and it walked around my truck, and then it jumped in my truck.
Craig Ferguson, who heads Planet Bluegrass in Boulder, was dismayed by the roadblock.
It certainly doesn't represent what's going on at the festival. From my understanding, I think they'd have much better luck with a checkpoint in downtown Cortez than they would outside of town on festivarians on the way to the festival.
Ferguson said festival goers were clearly targeted by the traffic stops, and Planet Bluegrass will consider legal action.
I can certainly conceive of the possibility of us obtaining legal representation on behalf of a class of people that were all involved in an unreasonable search and seizure.
Meanwhile, some in government and law enforcement say the drug war has reached a breaking point and is crippling state court systems and prisons. Gina Garacia reports from KOTO Telluride.
We spoke with San Miguel County Sheriff Bill Masters, a registered libertarian who for years served as a Republican and felt it would be too risky to voice his opinion about the drug war.
Most programs would be stopped and reassessed, but this one just keeps growing and growing and growing. We should deal with this issue more as a medical problem than as a law enforcement problem. Law enforcement has failed to deal with it. But also, police officers have a lot of personal discretion in the laws they choose to enforce. And where we're going to devote our resources. If we choose that marijuana smokers are more important than tracking down serial killers or child abusers and kidnappers, we've got a real sick society. We have basically the same numbers of people using drugs 30 years ago that we have now, and we're probably going to continue that. And as a society, if we realize that a certain number of people are going to be alcoholics, drug abusers, and if you take away all the alcohol and drugs, they're going to go sniff gas or whatever it takes to get themselves high. And we have to accept there's going to be a certain number of those people. Now, how can we deal with that in a better way? Maybe through the medical community, some other method besides locking all these people up.
It's not only libertarians who are speaking out against the war on drugs. Colorado Senator Jim Dyer, a Democrat, introduced a bill that he said just barely squeaked into the law books this year.
As fate would have it, one of the very conservative members of the committee from where else, Colorado Springs, was out of the room when the vote was taken and it passed 5-4.
He felt it was about time to voice his opinion, and he said the response was surprisingly positive.
I honestly didn't know if it was going to be death, a political suicide or not. I write a weekly column that gets printed in local papers, and one in particular I wrote last January struck a chord. It was about the war on drugs and the fact that I think that we've lost it and that we need to really think again about what we're doing with this issue. To that end, I received about 60 emails and phone calls from the area in response to it, every single one of them saying, yeah, we agree. I just decided, I wrote this first five columns of the year were about guns, drugs, abortion, divorce, and gays. So I said, let's lay this out. You know, hey, I'm not going to live forever. I survived 3 years in the Marine Corps in Vietnam, so I can damn well, take some political risk as well. And I was just really happy that people are ready for this change and ready to say this isn't the way things should be.
The bill allows money from the Drug Offender Surcharge Fund to go towards 3 pilot drug courts in different districts throughout the state. These courts take a different approach to dealing with drug offenders.
Basically, what we're trying to do is put people, make them, give them a chance to be contributing citizens instead of sitting in a cell. Mainly, it's a mindset and deferred sentences. The title of the bill was Deferred Sentences for Drug Offenders. So, you know, it sets up a separate judge who then will have the individual come back and for testing and for the therapy and all that sort of thing.
We're a large pocket of methamphetamine abuse here on the Western Slope in this district. And we were seeing really people not only being destroyed, but their families being destroyed. And we really kind of had to look for other opportunities and options.
7th Judicial District Attorney Wyatt Angelo doesn't openly claim that the war on drugs is a failure, but the situation in Montrose County led him to start one of the 3 drug courts in the state.
Our drug court started in Montrose County as a pilot project in August of 1999. To deal essentially with Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 controlled substances, mostly the central nervous system stimulants, which is cocaine and methamphetamine. Since that time, we've had our first graduation. We've got a number of people who are involved in the court right now, and hopefully the court's going to be expanding to Delta this summer, but for sure it's going to start its operations in Gunnison here within the next month. The traditional method by which the justice system was dealing with these types of cases was not working, and it was failing. And, you know, when things fail, you got to admit it and go look for other solutions.
People on all sides of the spectrum are starting to think twice about pouring money into the drug war. Gary Johnson, the Republican governor of New Mexico, has made it clear that he thinks the war has failed, as well as federal district judge John Kane, who said the drug war is clogging up the courts and prisons. For Thin Air, I'm Gina Garasio.
The jury is still out on whether the average reader or even advertiser should care about the new plan to run the Denver Post and Rocky Mountain News out of the same cash drawer. Dean Singleton, the cost-cutting CEO of Media News, becomes the czar over both papers. For now, the money-losing News will still come out under a joint operating agreement. That leaves the Weekly Westward as the remaining citywide independent voice in Denver. Westward's Michael Roberts charged that Scripps Howard didn't even try to sell the Rocky Mountain News because a monopoly is more lucrative.
There's every possibility the joint operating agreement will make the situation worse. It's going to immediately cause ad rates to skyrocket, and it's immediately going to cause the cost of subscriptions to skyrocket.
Media News says it won't have a monopoly because Denver has 14 TV stations, 37 radio stations, plus cable, dishes, and the internet.
But Roberts, who writes the media column in Westward, sees an eventual downhill slide for the Denver papers.
While you may continue to get the coverage that you're getting in the Post, in Aspen, Telluride, other communities around the state or the region, you may not get more because there won't be incentive to increase that. Over time, the news staffs tend to be depleted just as a lot of the other business operations are depleted. They have admitted that there are going to be a lot of job consolidations. Folks are going to look for better opportunities elsewhere. Bob Kravitz, who's one of their big sports columnists, just recently announced in his column that he's leaving the Rocky for the Indianapolis Star.
Since the merger plan was announced, the Denver Post has been offering bargain subscription rates to some readers. Robert says that could be positioning for future rate hikes. He says the merger will strengthen Westward's resolve to do tougher stories.
A lot of the coverage in the two newspapers has not been all that great and has not been all that sweeping or broad-ranging. And so even with two independent competitive daily newspapers, there seems to us that there have been plenty of things that have been overlooked.
You're listening to Thin Air.
While the affordable housing shortage grows ever more critical in Rocky Mountain tourist country, the Colorado Supreme Court has struck down local rent control provisions in Aspen and Telluride. The ruling affects hundreds of deed-restricted rental units in both resorts. The suit was brought by the Leucadia Corporation, which has extensive real estate holdings in Telluride. Herb Klein, Leucadia's Aspen attorney, said the case was a victory for vested property rights.
As long as you have a fear-based system, you are always going to get the opposite of what you really want. And I think that our governments have been stuck in this pattern of regulating, and when they don't get what they want, what do? They regulate some more. And when that doesn't work, they regulate some more.
Klein was speaking at the Telluride Ideas Festival, where local officials discussed a full retreat from government efforts to create housing through command and control. Aspen's large housing bureaucracy is under attack from Klein and others who say affordable housing is the burden of local government, not developers. In the face of a moratorium deadline and increased public hostility, Pitkin County commissioners have abandoned plans to impose new fees on trophy homes. Instead, they will ask voters in the fall for a new property tax to go toward housing. Aspen architect Michael Lipkin says public support is waning for subsidized housing.
I think in Aspen we've gotten a large segment of the community isn't comfortable producing affordable employee housing for the ski company, the Gap, Banana Republic. All we're doing is subsidizing their labor costs and the money goes out of the valley. We don't have a discussion about community housing and who these people are, whether they're our school teachers working in our hospitals, providing essential services.
Lipkin says in Aspen, growth control has become growth relocation. He advocates turning Aspen's nearest golf course into a new housing project.
I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that in Aspen, which has become a very divisive community, when we get around to growth control issues and affordable housing, I think the success has to exist at the level of convincing the community it's something worth doing. And we're being the kind of NIMBY who's saying they don't really want it in their backyard, just isn't socially acceptable anymore.
Also gathered in Telluride last month were Dwight Shellman, Michael Kinsley, and Joe Edwards, the three Pitkin commissioners who carried out Aspen's original downzoning in the mid-70s and who fought a losing battle against the four-laning of Highway 82 into Aspen. Even Shellman acknowledged that in the 1980s and 90s, there arose a backlash to government housing solutions.
We still have this sort of denial phenomenon that we're doing even in Aspen, which is to claim that development for employee housing is not development. And it's turned out that it's become profoundly impactive and the biggest development activity in the community, and is very frightening to some of us who helped create the program, who are now watching it being administered by a central government that's sort of alien from us.
There's an investigation into Aspen's housing lottery and alleged improprieties in the purchase of subsidized units. Firebrand Joe Edwards was alone in concluding that if developers don't want to provide housing, then development should be stopped.
We are not going to be able to grow anymore. And yet our whole, nobody even questions that. It's this paradigm of we're going to grow more, and for what? But frankly, I was happier in Aspen in 1970 when I didn't have a damn thing except a lot of time to play and a wonderful community to be around. And now to go up there, it's like being on Colfax Avenue.
Edwards said Aspen should require all housing to be resident occupied, but that solution seems unlikely now in the wake of the Colorado court decisions.
I think you ought to just take a stand and say, we're going to stop it.
Otherwise, says Edwards, the future is Aspen and Vail, where most of the property tax notices get mailed out of state.
Nobody lives there. You walk around on weekends, it's empty. Dwight and I and Michael had no inkling that the second home problem was going to rise to the level it did. But with John Denver singing about Starwood and Aspen and People magazine, you know, talking about all the movie stars coming there, it just inundated us. So stop having more festivals, stop publicizing, never talk to People magazine, don't let anybody sing about Telluride, and, you know, you might have a chance of saving yourself.
Terry Tempest Williams moved to Moab in 1998, and since then she's been finishing Leap, a book that juxtaposes her Mormon heritage with the medieval Spanish legacy of Hieronymus Bosch and the 20th century aesthetics of Spanish poet Federico García Lorca. Williams launched her nationwide book tour with a reading at Moab Star Hall, where she talked to KZMU's Rory Tyler.
Terry Tempest Williams has a brand new book coming out. I guess it's your first book-length production since Refuge a while ago.
It is, Rory.
The book is called Leap. Terry, let's talk about the process of writing this book, first of all. What's the premise here? What's going on?
We went into the great Prado Museum in Old Madrid, and we were wandering through the museum looking at the Velazquez, the Goya, the El Grecos, and then we turned the corner and went into the Bosch room. And I literally fell to my knees. What I saw before me was the medieval triptych painted in 1500 by Hieronymus Bosch called El Jardín de las Delicias, the Garden of Earthly Delights. What I knew was the left and right panel, the panels of heaven and hell. I had been raised under those prints as a child, growing up at my grandparents' home. Those two prints hung above the bed where the grandchildren slept. What I didn't know was that a whole middle panel existed, the middle panel being the Garden of Earthly Delights.
In the Garden of Earthly Delights, there's a lot of cherries, a lot of black.
Don't you love that the cherries are Utah's state fruit, which symbolically Jung would say it's sexual repression? I love that. Traditionally, art historians have read the panel left to right, paradise, the age of innocence, moving into the earth, which is exploration, which leads to sin, which leads to the seven deadly sins, and then moving into hell, which is the retribution. I find that incredibly dark and at the heart of really all Christianity, that the only way our souls are saved is to leave this planet and and hope for redemption on another in another place. You figure this triptych was an altarpiece. It was created in 1500, right on the cusp of the Reformation with Martin Luther, his critique of the Catholic Church, which then fueled the Counter-Reformation, led by Philip II, the most pious of Catholic kings. This triptych hung in his bedroom. And what gave rise from this period of time? The Renaissance. In many ways, 500 years later, I think this painting is as relevant as it's ever been, and I think it could be said that we're entering a period of an ecological reformation, and that what will be required of us is a complete upheaval of our religious, social, political, educational institutions.
Duende is one of the many concepts that you try to weave together in this book. And how would you describe duende? What's Lorca talking about when he says duende?
To me, duende is that unseen power that fuels us into unknown places. It's both restraint and passion at once. It's the flamenco dancer that hardly moves, but with a flick of the wrist, you feel her entire history come forth in that dance. As Lorca says, it is the raw power of the earth. I think it's what creates art.
So how are you going to live if you know that at any minute, as Lorca says, the great arsenic lobster could fall on your head?
Right. But in many ways, this painting moved me from a place of orthodoxy, Salt Lake City, to a place of freedom, Castle Valley. If you want to look at it in physical terms.
Your grandfather had a saying under his desk that said, there is no one true church, there is no chosen people. So it seems like you had a little bit of the heretic in your background.
I thought Carl Jung was a Mormon for years. You know, and then all of a sudden I realized, no, I don't think so. The Tempusite of my family is much more free than the Dixon Romney side. Mm-hmm. In so much of Mormon history and my own experience, there isn't a lot of joy. There's a lot of endurance. There's a lot of tenacity, and those, believe me, have their own strengths. But what about joy? What about sensuality? What about the pleasures of the body? Loving where we are at any given moment.
And just being grateful.
Absolutely. It's just sitting here by the river, looking at these beautiful cottonwoods and willows, living in Castle Valley and watching the sun just move across the faces of those cliffs in Castle Rock. We have so much more time. Uh-huh. And there's time to talk, time to visit, time to have dinner together, time to walk. In Salt Lake City, there was no time, or at least we didn't make time. And perhaps living in a landscape, an erosional landscape, like we all do here, we're aware of deep time, and so therefore we're more generous with our time.
Well, thank you so much, Terry.
Thank you so much, Rory.
Storytelling in the rural West gives farm and ranch people a chance to share stories and make new friends. Cowboy singer and champion yodeler Gary McMahon was just one of the voices at the Arvada Center annual Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Denver. Mae Jarrell filed this report from KGNU.
Peggy Godfrey runs cattle and sheep in Moffat, Colorado. The first time she shared a poem was at a funeral after a neighbor's death.
A poem about jumping fence, and that's what dying was for him. And, okay, corrals are made for work and stock. We build them good and stout. But large or small, there'll be a squall because the critter's wanting out. We build our fences tight and high, electrify the line. And then there comes a time for us. The ranch has got too small. The fence that kept us here so long ain't looking near so tall. With all the get-up we got left, relaxed, ain't nothing tense. We set our eyes, our heart, our mind, and simply jump the fence. That's the first half of it.
Godfrey also brings poetry into Colorado classrooms through the Young Audiences program. She says kids are fascinated by her life on a working ranch.
It's that sense that there's something very different about what I bring into the classroom.
She teaches the students how to choose which details to tell and which to leave out. to find out what grabs them about a situation and how to craft experiences into their own story. Just down the hall, small, wiry Maggie Mae Sharp, National Lady Cowboy Poet in 1996, takes time out to talk about history and recite a few verses.
Okay, cowboy poetry is a very old art form. I like to tell the stories of the people in the West. The West was not settled by John Wayne and Errol Flynn. It was settled by our ancestors, which were men and women. And I use my poetry to tell stories because most of it is very uplifting, and though they may have sad endings because people died very young back then, they all tell a story. Older women really relate to what I try to say because generally a lot of women in the audience have had a problem marriage, maybe had one divorce, maybe had two, and they're feeling pretty low. And I like to try to bring that back up with words of self-esteem and help you to look at things a different way. And that's what I do. This is one of my absolute favorites. It's called Lilacs. I want to plant lilacs with a man that I love, together to dig in the soil. For somehow it seems that more lilacs will grow, with love and with four hands to toil. I want to plant lilacs with a man that I love, round a cottage built by our own sweat and tears. For although it may fall or burn to the ground, love and lilacs will last through the years. For there isn't a road you can take in this life, whether eastern or western you go, when you won't pass an abandoned old homestead, where the chimneys stand alone in a row. And the wood has been burned, and the bricks toppled down, sometimes even the trees are all withered away. But the lilacs remain, and they bloom every year, and they multiply more with each passing day. So if I were to plant lilacs with a man that I love, together to dig in the soil, still somehow it seems that more lilacs will grow, with love and with four hands to toil.
Lilacs appears in three compilation volumes this year. Sharp also runs the Ruby Ridge Cattle Company in Black Forest, Colorado. And around the next bend in the trail, Ernie Martinez compares the life of today's cowboy to yesterday's.
This one I co-wrote with a good friend of mine, Ray Lejeune, who couldn't be here today.
For Thin Air, I'm Mae Jarrell.
It's all about a modern-day cowboy that was driving along in his cattle truck and was riding side saddle and dreaming about how or what it would be like, you know, 100 years ago back in the Old West and having to really drive these cattle.
Thanks once again for listening. Thin Air is brought to you by the High Country Community Radio Coalition. You might be listening to KRZA in Alamosa and Taos, KAJX in Aspen, KGNU in Boulder, KDNK in Carbondale, or KBUT, Crested Butte, and Gunnison.
Or you might be hearing us on KDUR Durango, KAFM Grand Junction, KZMU Moab, KVNF Paonia, KRCL in Salt Lake City, or KOTO Telluride.
In the darkness of this trail that we ride, there is danger as we reach the other side. Storms are brewing just as hard as it'll go through the Rockies.
Funding for Thin Air comes from your local station and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Now the trail is getting longer and the fever's getting stronger. Stories once we're told are here to stay. And I'll be driving them old dogies, smoking them old stogies. The cowboy's dream will never fade away.